Welcome to episode 164 of the Adventure Audio Podcast. Thank you everybody for tuning in. We really appreciate you doing that. This is a fun episode. We speak with Keith Weber. He is a physical therapist from Red Deer, Alberta, also better known as Kettlebell Keith. He is an advocate and developer of a physical training system based entirely around kettlebells. Keith is one of the fittest, most badass people that I know. Honored to have him on. I actually met him down in Crow's Nest Pass a couple of years ago as he was participating in a bike race that I put on. Super fun chat though. Keith is awesome. And Laval and Keith are planning on getting together to train, which is terrifying to everybody anywhere near that. So I'm happy to be out of town when they're doing that. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Doer Performance. You can visit them at doer.ca if you're Canadian. If you're American, you can visit them at shopdoer.com. They are the world's most comfortable pants. I attest to that. They're absolutely awesome. And if you happen to be located in or around Calgary, you can go visit them in person at 1708 4th Street Southwest. That's on the corner of 17th Avenue and 4th Street, which is just a great place to hang out in the city of Calgary if you're by. Thank you again to Keith Weber. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into the podcast. And we will get you onto this episode right now. Here, Keith, I'll give some background on how we first met, because it's I think we have a good story of how we originally met, and you guys are actually more in each other's orbit than you realize, because you actually were racing in the same race on the same day down in Crow's Nest Pass. So 2 years ago, I was signing people into the Crow's Nest Pass bike race, which is what's on my hat here. We've talked about it on the podcast before, and this young lady was signing in, and I asked her like where she heard about the race, which is a cool thing about having such a small team, which is mostly just my cousin Sasha and I, that we do everything. So we get to talk to everybody that comes in and sign up and race, and we can ask them like, how did you get here? And she's like, actually, my dad signed me up, and he's down here, and he's so excited, and he's like, he's been talking about this for months. And that turned out to be you. So you were there with your daughter, I think your son, maybe, and there was, you definitely had a crew with you of racers. And you were signed up for and completed our 100. It's called 150K, but I think it's actually more like 160. It's about 100 miles, our gravel bike race. And Laval was in that same race that same day. And that's how we met. And then after that race, you and Sasha and I had a conversation outside the bar in Crow's Nest Pass, yes, actually. And you just entertained us so much, because you were so like in the moment of having completed this race, and you've done it. You were a really accomplished athlete, numerous Ironmans to your credit and stuff. And you were like, I can't freaking believe that race. You're like, phew. So since then though, you've become one of my favorite follows on Instagram. I told Laval that.
Thank you.
I've got like a handful of people that I use for inspiration. And full disclosure, most of them are guys that are just a little bit older than me, but in better shape than me. So it gives me a lot of like, and Laval is on that list of people. Andrew Reed, who we had a couple weeks on ago, if you haven't given him a listen, Keith, you should.
I will.
And I was like, well, we should really have Keith on the podcast and talk about this. It was fortuitous, because I was thinking about that, and literally, as I had told Laval about having you on, you registered for the bike race this year, like the same day that Laval and I were talking about having you on the podcast. And I was like, fuck, that's a sign. So, but you signed up big time. You're going to do the 100K mountain bike race on the Saturday, and then you're going to do the 150K gravel bike race the next day. So I want to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. I want to talk about kettlebells, but I also want to talk about what is a guy who is in our demographic age-wise do to get ready for a challenge like that, because it's no joke. You've both been there. Mm-hmm. You cannot half-ass that race back-to-back, and you can't do it off the couch. You need to be definitely very prepared. You're obviously using it for some fuel and motivation. I'd love to hear about all that. So that's about 100 questions, but let's just start with physiotherapy and how you got into the kettlebell. The kettlebell thing so much. So you kind of have two things, right? You're a physiotherapist in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada. And, but you're also, you've developed a series of kettlebell, like training circuits, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And you're definitely an advocate for, there's no better fast, easy way to train in a small space with minimal equipment than kettlebells.
I was had kids, was an avid gym goer. Like, I like doing everything. I wouldn't say I was a gym rat, but in my 20s, I was probably concerned with getting, you know, jacked so that, you know, I could attract women. But I always liked cardio. Like, I always emphasized that as part of my training. And started working out at home when we had kids, because I almost didn't go to the gym for a year, because I'm like, why would I go to the gym when I've got kids? Like, and then I set up this really kind of cool basement gym and was like, this is the way to go. Like, I'm getting in great shape. But after a couple of years of that, who knows, maybe if I would have found CrossFit, CrossFit didn't exist then. This was early 2000s. Maybe I would have fallen in love with that, because it's similar in nature. You're doing resistance training under a massive cardiovascular load. But just happened across this guy named Pavel Satsulin that was gracing the... He wrote one article in this one magazine I subscribed to, and it was pretty much the only reason I bought the magazine. And then he had some books, and long story short, back in the day, I ordered his VHS tape about kettlebell training, and I was instantly, I need to learn how to do that. Ordered kettlebells. They didn't ship them to Canada, had them shipped to where we go in Idaho for vacation every year. And I remember months waiting, I can't wait to try this. And when I got them, looking back, my wife's got videos I need to find of me literally beating myself into a pulp with these things, because I was trying to learn off a VHS tape. And like, as it oftentimes is the case, the master himself, I don't think his video was for teaching purposes. It was more like a promotional video. So I was trying to do what he was doing. Decided to go down and take the course. And it was like a 3-day course. And it was great. It was fun. It was just life-changing, really. And that's when I realized that, if you teach this correctly, this is actually hard but safe. And I thought, I wonder if I could use this to help leverage people's fitness that I treat. Because if you do it correctly, it's easy on the easy on the joints, but really hard on the muscles. And the most important muscle, your heart. Like, it's, aside from the assault bike, I don't know a better way to get your heart rate jacked up in the comfort of your own home. I mean, obviously, going to the top of a steep climb on a mountain bike, that's probably the only other way I can get my heart rate as high as I do is with kettlebells or an assault bike. But, and at the same time, you are developing the ability to maintain your tension in your body while you're breathing heavily, which is exactly what you want for a bike race. I mean, it's such a practical way. And I think I still love kettlebells more than CrossFit, because I can choose how I want to hit my body. CrossFit is great, but there's certain exercises that I don't think carry over as directly to the things I like to do. So, I was an only child, so I like doing things my way. So, I get to test my workouts on my Wednesday night kettlebell class. And these people are amazing. I try to tell them how impressed I am by them, but because they'll do whatever I do. Well, I mean, of course, I do it with them, so I'm suffering with them, but it's a good suffering. It's that, you know, you're not hurting yourself suffering. It's that, oh my God, my heart rate is through the roof, but I think I can do. I try to go with the hardest exercises that are the most technical, and then continue down to the easiest. So the swing would arguably be the easiest. So even if your heart rate's at maximum capacity, you can still muster up the ability to do 10 more swings and then recover quickly, get back onto the next set. Just like getting to the top of a climb mountain bike, and you don't pull out the lawn chair and sit down and wait for your heart rate to recover. Mm-hmm. No, you recover on the go. And you have to recover, because now you're going down a hill and you have to have your wits about you. Otherwise, you're going to crash. And it's a fun way of training, and it does remind me of that almost desperate feeling of just pure focus. Meanwhile, you might only have one kettlebell, and you might be outside or you might be in your basement, but you don't need a whole lot of gear. All you need is a plan, which I've tried to come up with the best. I've tried to come up with multiple plans so it never gets boring. And then just the determination and go into that mindset, kind of like getting into an ice bath. Like, this is going to be hard, but it's really healthy and good for me. So after 20 years of doing it, I still love it. I mean,
that's saying something, hey, that one exercise that you think you'd get tired of after two decades is still something that you keep coming back to.
It gives me everything I need in terms of getting that nice feeling that I'm getting my muscles working. But the cardio was, I think, of number one importance for me as far as longevity goes. I know so many people, I don't want to say negative things, but I mean, especially young people my kids' age, I'll say, how do you want to try working out with me with the kettlebells? And these guys are big, hulking giants, and they are using a kettlebell lighter than the women in my class because their heart, it's like driving around with a jacked up 4x4 with a lawnmower engine. You're not even a functional human being. Like, you look good, you got big muscles, but oh man, the motor, you got to get that motor going. So it's the great equalizer, because as soon as you get gassed, your strength, you have no strength whatsoever. And I think that is the most important thing with the kettlebell training. You can actually, it's safe just the way you hold on to the kettlebell too. Even if you're exhausted, you're still able to do it safely. And it's really a relatively lightweight for my workouts. Like, even at the heaviest I would go for a 5 minute set would be a 24 kilogram. So that's a little over 50 pounds. Relatively, it's not that heavy. It's heavy enough if you do enough reps, but it's not so heavy that you're having to, and I try to manipulate my rep schemes and my workouts so that the only reason you're stopping is because your heart is going to literally give out. I don't want to have to stop because my shoulder's too tired. My shoulder's tired. Good, let's do this side. And it's amazing how far you can continue and you can get your heart rate higher and higher. And then finally you get to the point where, okay, I have to stop. And then you learn to recover. You teach your body to recover really quickly. And I really noticed that my recovery heart rate, because, you know, we have all these wonderful watches that tell us, I'm amazed. Like, after 30 seconds, I'm like, that's crazy. I'm ready to go. Like, what? I'm not quite ready. I always get started the next set before I'm fully recovered. But my heart rate will go from 170 down to 140, 130 within a minute. I'm like, that's a good sign. Like, I'm thinking just the amount of expansion that we're getting in our blood vessels and the amount of how healthy that is for the heart. Like, yeah, I'm so thankful that I found that method of training. And the interesting thing is, it's not the preferred method of training with kettlebells. A lot of people, I think, have a bit of disdain for this time. And smoke an athlete, which I think they mean you work the person to the point of fatigue, which that's okay if you want to call it smokers, but it's a much maligned term in sort of the mainstream kettlebell world, which actually is an oxymoron because kettlebells aren't really mainstream yet. But and it was interesting because in order to pass the course when I first did it, you had to do what they called the grad workout, which was my favorite part of the course. It was like an hour, and we had one kettlebell, and we're out on a football field, and we had to do basically an hour worth of various exercises that we'd learned over the weekend. And it was hard and fun, and guys are like throwing up, and now I get it. Like, this is the potential that these things have. But during the course, they were more concerned, they called the martial arts of weight training, so they're more concerned with Oh, your hand is 1 degree too far to the right. Oh, sorry, like it's, I don't know. I don't think if you want it to be safe, but the technical part of it isn't important. As long as it's safe, there's various degrees of perfection. And to me, if it's safe and you're using a weight that you can handle, it's an appropriate way to train. And so yeah, I think I'm a little bit unique in the kettlebell world because a lot of people are they want to use them for strength training purposes, but they don't emphasize the cardio. So I'm more about the cardio, but strength at the same time. I don't want a person using a light kettlebell. Like I want it to be, I want it to be challenging, but again, not if I use an 80-pound kettlebell, well, I mean, I'm not that strong. I'm not going to be able to handle that thing to the point where, again, I'm trying to get that heart rate to the point where it would be in a mountain bike race or climbing a mountain and that high that you get. That's what I'm seeking. That's the most important reason I do it. It's just like the best drug I've ever found. So, plus the good side effect is I don't get fat. I can practically eat whatever I want. I feel good all the time. I guess I feel like it's made me stay a little bit younger than I know it's made me stay younger than I otherwise would have. I mean, my body, I really feel like I'm signaling my body, hey, sorry, you're not allowed to go get old. You can get older, but you're not allowed to age. So, and I feel like there's still potential. Like I can still get fitter with the kettlebell training. So.
Dean Karnazes said that years ago when I had the opportunity to chat with him, that he said, "Well, I'm chronologically 63," I think is the way that he put it, which I
Right.
love. Like, yeah, on a calendar I'm 63, but he's like, biologically I'm not 63. And
I like that.
I thought
Yeah,
that
that's
was a great way to look at it.
and Andrew Reid, when we had him on, he talked about that lots. He had that the thing that got this Andrew Reid guy's this Aussie physical trainer that we were mentioning before we started recording, Keith. And what hooked me on him when I sent his post to Pete was he was standing on the side of a valley in a valley in Nepal, and he was doing some trekking peaks with his wife who's a firefighter, and he was talking about guys our age. I'm 55. How old are you, Keith?
54.
Yeah. So, and Pete's a child.
Right.
So
Yeah, I
he was
know.
talking about guys living in the past, and he was, like, I used to be able to do this, or I used to be able to do that. And he said, take your fucking shirt off, stand in front of the mirror, take a look at your body, and basically fix it, is what he said. He said, if you're not happy with it, because you and I get this probably more than Pete, but I hear so many people saying, oh yeah, I'm 40 now. Yeah, like I can't do that. I'm too old, or I'm 42, or I'm 45. And I just think that, aging is the aggressive pursuit of comfort. People want to start tailing back their training and tailing back their physical activity. But really, as you age, you could, I think there's some argument to lower the intensity at some point, but increase the volume, right? And I think that's so critical to maintain if you want to keep fun like if you want to keep be a high functioner at our age, right?
And to be
It's true.
clear, like Keith is not he you have to give him a follow on Instagram, folks, and you'll see what I mean. Like he is practicing what he preaches when he talks about the cardio element, because like you are a puddle when you're finishing some of these workouts that you're posting. Like you look like you're melting. You're not kidding around. Like you're going full gas, obviously.
Yes, and then I wake up the next day. I mean, I don't do a lot of mobility work, but what I do, I feel like the timing of it is really good. I do a little bit of mobility first thing in the morning, the five rights. I mean, I've beat that one to death, but yet there's so many people. What are the five rights? People that follow me, I'm like, I put up about 100 videos on it, but I'll do another one. But it's just a nice active mobility routine, and then I'll do my nightly stretching routine beside my bed. takes 10 minutes, sometimes 15. And I feel like the consistency of that, it's like flossing your teeth. So if I wake up in the morning and I'm stiff from yesterday's workout, okay, I no wonder I'm stiff. I mean, I'd be laying there in bed in a still position. So get the things moving there, work out, then I feel better. And then before I go to bed, I'm reminding my body, okay, sorry, you're not allowed to adaptively shorten. Let's get you lengthened out again. And I sleep so much better. And then I wake up in the morning, I'm like, I'm ready to work out again. So yeah, I do agree with the volume. I do find my workouts are getting longer, and I think there's still the intensity's still there, but I'm adding more and more and more because I can, and it feels good. And I feel like I need at least an hour. I call it my hour of power. At least an hour of hard work and half an hour. Like I used to do the 20-minute, you know, snatch challenge, and your arms feel like they're falling off. And I think there's a value in that to test yourself every once in a while, but I wouldn't want to train that way all the time because it doesn't matter if I'm good at snatches. Like nobody really cares. So, and it's not going to help me be better at doing this races that I'm literally, I've never been this scared and excited about doing something since I, even more so than Ironman, because after doing that gravel race, that tested me. Like I've never laid down. I laid down in that ditch coming up that last hill. I lost count. I'd go about 5 minutes and then I'd be like I've never balked or hit the wall that hard. And it felt so good just laying in the ditch. And I thought, I'm going to finish this race. It's just, I'm going to have to take it like piece by bite sized piece. And when I was done, I'm like, wow, like I did it. But, and I haven't felt that accomplished about a physical challenge. I don't think ever. Like nothing tested me to that point.
Which is, I mean, that's a massive compliment to the imagination of the race. So, I mean, I really appreciate that. Cause like Ironman is obviously no joke. So to say that is huge. And there's a huge wrinkle for you in it because you're going back to back. Right. So they're two single day events, but you've got a very short amount of time before you're going to be getting off of that mountain bike and getting back in the gravel race. Right. And how do you keep your head together, your body together and sort of deal with that piece of it. Right. I do want to say that's the piece. This is a good breakout is the way that you felt when you laid down for 5 minutes to give yourself that break. Like that's not laying down in the woods that's not a 7 out of 10 good feeling. That's like a 13, right? That's what I want people to understand about doing these things and these, like, challenging yourself this way. It's like, if you think a Coca-Cola is good, try after a 100-mile bike ride in the mountains when it's 30 degrees out, right? And it's like the greatest thing that you've ever tasted in your entire life. Your sleep that night, all of these things, they're so much better, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just, the whole seeking comfort, it's, how do you know what comfort feels like if you never feel discomfort? I mean, it can't feel good to be really, really heavy and overfed and under-exercised. Like, life can't, I know life can't feel that good, and especially compared to that race. I always tell people the beautiful thing with that race, unlike Ironman, the big differentiation is Ironman, you can pull the pin anytime. You say, I'm done. There's volunteers all over the place. They'll take you in a medical tent. And that race, when you get over to the other side of that hill, I can't call my wife. My cell phone doesn't work. I can't say, honey, I'm really tired. Can you come pick me up? Nobody's there. It's just you. And there's something wonderful about that because worst case scenario, I walk my bike up the hill. I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it to the point where my cell phone works again. But I mean, that's not even going to happen. I know that's not going to happen, but having that added push that knowing that you're on your own, it's refreshing.
You are in the woods. Yeah.
Yeah. You really are.
And you get back there. You do. Like we take you back into the backcountry, and you will definitely notice it's unforgiving and remote territory. Beautiful. But you need to be prepared. Yeah, you need to be prepared.
Just for our listeners who aren't from Alberta or Western Canada, we're talking about Pete's and his cousin Sasha's mountain bike / gravel race, 2-day event held in Crow's Nest Pass, which is in southern Alberta, in the southern part of the Canadian Rockies, and it is epic. I mean, it's funny when we're talking about this, Keith. You know, you're at the top of a climb on this race, and you cross a cattle guard. There's always a cattle guard at the very top of the race, and then you know that you can start gearing up and going downhill again. But yeah, what a race! Just set in such incredible scenery, blue skies. The only negative on the year that you and I were racing against each other, Keith, was the fact that they were looking for that missing fisherman. Remember, there was that guy that went missing in that creek, so that brought a bit of a somber, because yeah, we know now yeah, that he was deceased. But yeah, it really is a spectacular event, and I love what you're saying, is that when you do something hard like that, when you push yourself to the limit, it's so much more rewarding than if you decide to, well, let's say you decide you feel like going for a bike ride, you feel like signing up for a race, but instead you lay down on the couch and you take a nap. Laying down on the couch is instant gratification. I mean, it feels good immediately. You eat that donut and it tastes good immediately. What we're doing when we do these things, the things that the three of us do, is you're delaying the gratification, and it's so much more intense at the end. And you feel like, feel like you've just blown the carbon out of your system when you're at the finish line. You feel lean. You feel like you're not carrying anything extra. And you know that you've done something really good for you and for your body, for sure.
Oh, and well, like you're saying, Lavelle, about, like, I almost felt like last year, so I did the 50K mountain bike, just one lap, which is a hard lap.
Just one lap.
Yeah.
It's a
vertical
bike ride, yeah.
Very fun race. I was like, I kind of re-fell in love with mountain biking because we did that cross-Canada trip, so I hadn't been on the mountain bike since the summer before. And I was a little bit worried about my technical skills deteriorating, but I mean, after doing that, I thought that would be fun to do two laps of that. And then when I did the one lap of the gravel the next day, I have a friend who's, I love friends who push you. And he was bugging me at least once a week. He's like, "Hey Keith, we're going to sign up for both races, right?" And I was like, no, I don't think so. Part and he's like,
"No, I don't think so."
Like, after that, like, I still have memories of that race 2 years ago, and I was like, but then I looked at people that have done both races, and I thought, I wonder what it must feel like to be that fit. I thought, what am I doing here? Like, this is not me. Oh, I'm not going to do that. It's going to be hard. I thought, wow. So I signed up. I was like, this is the right thing to do. This is going to force me to level up like nothing else, because I have no choice. If I don't really get into my training, dial in my sleep, diet, I'm not going to finish it. I will not be able to finish that. I'll get through maybe the first race, and then the next day, there's no way, unless I'm in the best shape of my life, which is super exciting. So yeah, I'm just like, everything I do now is focused on getting stronger and stronger and fitter and fitter and healthier and healthier. So yeah, it makes discipline very easy.
Yeah. Because having a goal, right? Having a goal, having something to aim for. I find that if you don't, you're just kind of rudderless, and you just can't stay focused. But if you have something to aim for, it makes the training so much easier, right? And so much more focused.
Meaningful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. And I mean, I just love the whole event. I love being down there. I love that part of the world.
It's got a good vibe.
It's a special community, right? It's a hidden gem. It's not, I grew up in Calgary. So my parents owned a store in Lake Louise when I was a little kid. My cousins grew up in the Bow Valley. So the Bow Valley is very much home to me, but it's much more commercialized and way different, where Crow's Nest has this cool, rich mining history and tragic past, mining disasters, Frank mm-hmm. Slide, Prohibition. It's got a crew because it's so close to the U.S. border. Lots of crazy rum running stories. And I mean, it's a really, really, really neat place. It's one of the only places in Canada you can do a mine tour. So there's something for everybody down in Crow's Nest Pass. Yeah. It's very underrated spots.
Yes.
So, but you know, it really embraced us. So let's you alluded a little bit to preparation. We're recording this in early February.
Yes.
So you've got about 6 months to go.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that look like? So we've got a 54-year-old athlete, experienced athlete, but how are you building yourself? What are you doing differently to prepare for this? Knowing that you're going into the 2 days and those, like, how are you kind of building out your plan?
I am focusing on 2 day blocks of training. So I want to have day one where I do something really strenuous, probably something to do with kettlebells, something to do with weights. And then the next day I'm going to hit it hard on the bike and progressively increase my ability to go higher intensity, because those hills, I mean, on that gravel race are just, they're nuts. I want to be able to, I know I'm going to be tired that day, no matter how much pacing you can't pace yourself in that mountain bike race. I mean, those hills are the hills, and
there's no pacing. You're going to be totally maxed out to keep the bike moving forward. Yeah.
And so I think I want my body to adapt to recovering quickly and being able to train hard in a partially recovered state. So I'm 2 days on, 1 day not off, but on that day, on the active recovery day, I'll do something low impact, like swimming. I love swimming because I'm not a good swimmer, but which I think makes it a good workout for me, because I feel like it's like yoga while you're floating and while you're stretching everything. It's a wonderful recovery tool. Ice baths, hot tub, stretching, walking, you know, like just a really nice day where I just, and then refocus and then boom, hit it again. And I think if I can do at least two-day blocks a week, at my age, I'll be able to effectively recover in order to keep increasing my fitness and strength while at the same time not getting burnt out. And
so you're going to have at least four pretty intense days a week for 6 months.
Yeah. And
okay.
Like after that cross Canada trip, like Lavelle was saying, like just so many times when you're like, oh God, I'm so tired. You wake up in the morning, you've been going for, we didn't take many days off. We kind of banked our holidays. So the kids wanted to have 3 days in Montreal. So we only took 2 days off across the prairies, and we were putting in some big days. And, you know, you wake up and you're so tired, and or at least you convince yourself that you're tired, because as soon as you get on the bike, 20 minutes later, you're like, I actually feel pretty good. Was I really tired?
And I remember, we're incredible machines. Right?
And
incredible.
The closest experience I had to that before in my life was when I tree planted for 8 summers. I loved that job because it was the same thing. You'd wake up in the morning, you'd have to pry your hand apart because it was so stiff from being in the shovel. And you're just like, oh, you can hardly move. But then you get out planting, and that first run of the day, you start sweating. You're like, oh, I feel great. You know, and that went on day after day after day. And that's when I started realizing, I think this overtraining thing might be a little bit of a myth. Like, I think maybe most of us are undertraining. And,
I think so too. Yeah. Most people have never been anywhere near overtraining.
Near their limit. Yeah. We had a really good guest on, Alex Hutchison. He's a writer for the Globe and Mail. He writes a column called Sweat Science, and it's all about exercise physiology and about, he wrote a book, about endurance, and it's about how our internal governing system, our brain, tries to shut us down before we need to be shut down. And I've actually experienced that. I'm not going to go through the story, but I had a life and death experience in the Himalayas once, where I was convinced I was lying down to die, and I was able to keep on going just because something inspired me to keep going. Whereas I had shut down. I was in that terminal phase of exhaustion where I was going to die. And I think we carry that everywhere. People are just convinced that they can't do stuff. They no, I'm too old for that. I don't have the time for that. a 6-minute kettlebell workout. I don't have a time for that. Mm-hmm. And it's complete bullshit. I think we're always selling mm-hmm. ourselves short and looking for the either the hack or the easy way out. Back to your training for the Crow's Nest Pass 100. What about on the bike stuff? What are you doing? Are you going to be down in the Red Deer River Valley there, ripping it up in the coolies, or are you going to be heading out to Sylvan Lake, or what are you going to do? Gull Lake?
What I'll do is, because when we trained, we didn't do a lot of training for the Cross Canada trip. Relatively, my daughter and her boyfriend, they do a lot of CrossFit. His parents actually own the CrossFit gym, and I like some of the workouts. Like they used to do a workout where they do three workouts back to back. They called it Monday mashup. So I always go for Monday mashup because I felt like I got my hour of power. So they were doing that. I was doing my kettlebells, but once a week we do a minimum 3-hour ride on the trainers, just like the Tax Neo trainers.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that one ride a week, and we just crank the tension. We put it like, okay, we're gonna go 200 watts for the next hour. Okay, here we go. And it's like, oh my god. But I felt like those training sessions prepared us better than anything else we did. Mm. Having the other things helped round things out, but I feel like that time under tension where your legs never get a break and you just, it's like you're going up this really steep hill,
just grinding.
That's what I'm going to use. So I'm going to progressively increase that load on my legs until, I mean, I 8 hours really. Like I'm probably going to taper off a couple of weeks before the race, but that's my goal, is to go at a certain wattage. It's very challenging. Maybe I'll start with 1 hour and then I'll, every week, maybe I'll add on half an hour and maybe I'll scale back. But I'll do that under a state of fatigue. And I feel like if I can do that, it will make it possible to complete day two. and then I want to do my strength training and I've got an assault bike, which is, I mean, it's a beautiful torture device because, again, like kettlebells, unlike a rowing, absolutely good for your heart rate, but you could hurt your back. I mean, there's far better ways to destroy your back than with a rowing machine. So I don't love the rower for long. Like over the span of time, I feel like you could ride the assault bike every day and you're not going to hurt anything.
Mm-hmm.
Your pride and, you know, your heart's going to get up there. I mean, it's just such a...
Yeah,
perfect.
I've ridden one at a CrossFit gym, and they are a torture device. You're right; they are.
When
you're using it for calories, so it's like up to whatever number that is. Like, oh, what a terrible feeling! I'm trying to get it up there.
When I bought one because my daughter's boyfriend's dad, who owns a CrossFit gym, during COVID, right after my last knee surgery, where they like cut my leg in half and realigned the bone. It was just, I was the weakest I'd ever been in my life. I could ride the stationary bike, but it kind of hurt. But I put the clipless pedals. He lent me an assault bike and I started riding. I'm like, this is actually pretty easy on the knee. But when I put the clipless pedals on, it was even better. And that's sort of how I rehabbed myself. Now I got obsessed with the assault bike because I still couldn't put enough weight on my knee joint to do kettlebells. And I came up with this. It takes about, if you can do it under an hour, it's pretty good. But it's a series of different interval training sessions that I came up with that I tried to do it 3 times a week for 6 weeks. And I actually did, I don't believe in the term adrenal fatigue, but I did get to the point where my performance was declining. About 4 weeks in, I'm just like, oh God, like I'm actually, and I thought, that's good. Like that is... I'm thinking if you scale, I want to do that for an hour and then get on the trainer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be really effective training. And then day off, repeat. And there might be weeks where I'll see how it feels. Like I've got the nice mattress cover now that keeps me cool at 2 a.m. so I don't have to kick the blankets off. It's actually one of the biggest splurges I've made for my health. But
wow, that was a tangent. What do you mean? You've got like a cooling electric cooling blanket or something?
Yeah, it's an eat sleep mattress cover.
Oh, I've heard about this. Yeah,
And I looked at them, this chili pads, and I looked at both of them, and I looked at all these YouTube videos, and they're so expensive. Like I could almost buy a mountain bike for a month. Now, maybe not. No, not the mountain bike I want, but I could, you know, I could buy something big. And I thought about it for, and I thought, what am I doing? Like, I know I could sleep better because I was monitoring it on my Garmin. This thing monitors your sleep, your HRV, all these different things. And so I've been using it for about 2 months, maybe a month. And it's, wow, it's changed my sleep.
Wow. And sounds like an ad for Eat Sleep.
Yeah. It does. Well, and I was really, it took me a long time to actually set it up because I was like, maybe I should send it back. I don't know. But it's really helped. But the biometric monitoring on it is extremely accurate.
Really?
As far as the REM sleep and the deep sleep compared to the watch. Like this morning, I kind of woke up in the middle of a dream, looked at my stats, and it, sure enough, REM sleep right to the point where I woke up. And I'm like, I don't know how they do that. But, and it's monitoring my HRV. And I know my HRV is not good right now, which doesn't mean I'm going to quit training. So it goes up again. It just means that I need to get more sleep. I need to quit drinking so much beer. I've been having quite a, we were in Hawaii and I've been having a fun time. I've been balancing it out with the training, but I've been having the pain pleasure quotient. I need to a little less pleasure, a little more pain. So, and I know it will, and I know like on nights where I behaved myself and ate well, boom, sleep score is 100. And I'm like, why do I do these things to sabotage myself?
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're fun.
Yeah.
And it's going to be more fun to complete this race.
Yeah, a couple glasses of wine are fun while you're having them. But then the next day you're kind of dragging. And you just and you can look at your sleep score. Let's, because we're the same age and we do work out in similar ways. I don't use kettlebells, but I do hammer every day. Do you know what your... I opened up as you're talking about heart rate variability. I looked at my average resting heart rate. Do you know what yours is? Because we're the same age.
The respiration rate?
No, resting heart rate.
Like, oh, what's your heart rate? My bed tells me it gets down to about 42 at night while I'm sleeping.
Yeah, good. Yeah, because for our age, we should be far higher. My average resting heart rate, looking at my Garmin app, is 36 beats per minute. Which is creepy low.
That's
it's
really
so low that when I've been injured and end up in emergency and they take my heart rate, sometimes they bring the crash cart thinking I've got a heart issue. But 42 is super low as well for our age. And and that's because of our chronic working out for decades.
Decades. Yeah. Decades on end.
Decades.
That's why.
Well, and then the maximum heart rate too is supposed to be 220 minus your age. So I'm like, so my max heart rate should be like 165, 166.
No, that's an interesting one. Yeah, that's an interesting one. The 220 minus your age has been sort of the number that everybody uses, but I've also heard 215 minus your age for fit people. So 215 minus your age. And then there's also a more complicated one where you do 220 minus your age and then you multiply it by like, I can't remember. There's a percentage you get it to. And so when I've looked at mine, and I just did it last week trying to determine what my zone two is or what my max was, it's supposed to be between 170 and 175, which is probably exactly where you are, right?
Okay.
Probably right.
I mean, I think I had it up to 180 last year during this CrossFit workout, but
redlining.
That was rare. But yeah, I can get it up like with my kettlebell classes, a little over 170.
Yeah, and that's then, good.
Like it's, I mean, that's the goal. Hey, get that heart, get it up there.
Some cardiac surgeons listening to us going, oh my God.
It's like, no.
Yeah, right.
So whenever we have somebody who has a niche like you do with kettlebells, I always like to try and get like a sense of like what's a beginner version of something like this for people. So when we had a caving expert on the podcast and I asked him like what's like the 5K fun run version of caving, right? Because most people will never go inside a cave. They might get to the entrance of one in the mountains or something like that, but nobody will go in one. And then he knew exactly what I was trying to say. And he actually recommended a caving tour, which is just in Canmore, which is not very far. And my wife and I are probably going to get our kids out to. So that worked out perfectly. What's that version for kettlebells? Somebody who listens to this and is like, they know that a kettlebell is, it's a round piece of steel with a head.
Yes.
That's what they know. Where do they get them? What weight should you start with? Should you start with one? Should you start with two? And then tell us where they can find some of your workouts.
Well, you can get kettlebells practically anywhere. Beautiful kettlebells for about $2 a pound. So I'd say for most guys that are fit, you should be able to start out with a 16 kilo or 35 pounds. And then fit women, 10 to 12 kilograms. So they're very available. I mean, you can get them practically anywhere. The ones that they sell at Canadian Tire and Winners, the distance between the handle and the actual body of the kettlebell is quite important. I saw a kettlebell the other day that was had a plastic or rubber coating, and it had a very long chrome handle. And so when the kettlebell will be kind of resting on this tough part of your wrist here. If the handle's too long, it hits you on the muscle. And so pretty soon you're like, it doesn't feel very good. This part is amazingly adaptable. I think my wrists are a lot thicker than they were when I started kettlebells, just from the connective tissue there is just said, really, I've got almost like a callus there. And I feel like if I ever fell when I'm older, my wrist is going to just like, that's nothing, because I've had this weight resting on it for so many years. And then as far as, I always say extreme four, day one and two with a single kettlebell is the perfect beginner's program. Day one, you do only 5 reps with this side, 5 reps with that side. And then once you can do that, then you do 5-5-5-5 with the left side, 5-5-5 with the right. And then, but I don't think anyone believed me, because I look at my sales of extreme four and it's like, I did with my kids. My daughter was doing it with me, and I was like, I can't believe my kids are doing kettlebells with me. And my son did the day three, which is the doubles. So I'm actually going to put the beginners, the ultimate comeback workout or beginner's workout that you can work your way through, which is basically day one and two back to back, that I just filmed in Hawaii. I'm going to put it up on Gumroad again for enough so that I can pay for the video editing. I have some really awesome guy editing it, so that I can direct people, say, this is the foundational workout. It's got all of the best fundamental exercises, nothing fancy, but these are the exercises that you need to learn. Now, if you need to learn the exercises, ideally you hire somebody that knows how to do kettlebells and show you how to do it. But there's, I've had tutorials on my YouTube channel that are good. I want to make better ones because the sound quality wasn't good. And I've learned some new tips and tricks since then, but they're not that hard to learn. I mean, you have to learn how to squat again. And I have a sort of a progression. So I think you start by learning Turkish get-ups. Oh, you can't do Turkish get-ups? Okay, well, learn how to do them, because in doing those, you learn how to do the overhead squat and the windmill and the overhead lunge. Oh, wow, okay. And then from there, you move on to the squats and the lunges. And then I always teach people the swing at the very end, because people always do the swing, especially guys. They always want to lift the kettlebell, and you have to say, no, you're basically doing a repeated vertical jump with ski boots on. Like, you literally, your calves are just stabilizing. It's the exact same movement as trying to see how high you can jump, or how doing a standing broad jump, which happens to be a fundamental human movement, right? You're using your quads, your glute muscles, your abs to stabilize, and your arms just sort of floating up in the air. So, but this, it's tricky to teach, because our natural, especially as guys, they want to lift their arms. So it's not hard to learn, but I think, but I do want to have like a kettlebells, which I'm going to start doing right away, like kettlebells from beginning to end, to prepare people to do what I don't know what to call the workout, the perfect workout, the ultimate workout, but it's going to be, I'll probably have it up during the next couple of days. And it's the one I used after the bike trip across Canada. I'm like, I'm going to get back into kettlebells. How am I going to do it without hurting myself, but still get a good workout? And so I just kept adding on as I got. So it's about an hour long workout once you do the whole thing. And when you're done that hour, you feel like, depending on the weight you used, you've hit everything. There's no, oh, geez, now I have to go work my chest. No, I put that in there too. So it's my foundational workout I've been doing for years. And then the other workouts they're nice too, but I do that workout once a week because it keeps things, it's like a yoga routine, you know, like that's like a fundamental yoga routine that's got all the elements that you need that would carry over to something awesome, like climbing a mountain or riding a mountain bike. So, yeah.
And there's something about those, like a movement for functional fitness, like a Turkish getup.
Yes.
It's even if you don't do it perfectly, there's no wrong way to do that. I mean, if you get off of the floor flat with a kettlebell up over your head, like that's going to be hard and challenging, just like getting up off the floor holding a toddler or any other kind of movement that you're doing during regular life, right? Moving groceries. It's not always perfect. It's not supposed to be, right? So I think kettlebells are amazing for that.
Everyone's got a slightly different style based on, you know, maybe the length of their femurs or their body dimensions. And so, it's very natural movements. But the Turkish getup, I know a lot of guys that are very strong, guys my age, but they can't do the Turkish getup because their shoulders are too stiff. And if they were to focus on learning how to do the Turkish getup, they would probably fix their shoulders. But they probably won't, but that's okay. I just see so many shoulders in my practice as a physio. I mean, I told my son he wants to open up a clinic someday, and I said, call it the Weber Shoulder and Hip Clinic. Don't call it physiotherapy clinic. People like physio, I've done that before. No, hip and shoulder. Oh, yeah, actually, I've got a sore shoulder. You know, everyone's got sore shoulders. So kettlebells, even if your shoulder is a little bit cranky, you can still do kettlebells. Barbell, ouch, kettlebell. Yeah. So,
you know, one thing I saw on your social media was you did this very Canadian post. It was during the playoffs, and you called it the bag skate kettlebell workout. I mean, I've got a buddy, an American buddy who's into hockey. He lives in France, but I'm going to send him that because he works out with kettlebells all the time. But I was laughing at that. In your full hockey gear, in your driveway, like with a street hockey net behind you doing that. Loved it. So what was that about? Tell us about just for our Canadian listeners who haven't seen you do this bag skate kettlebell workout. Tell them what a bag skate is first, because our American and European listeners will, Aussie and New Zealand listeners especially, won't know this one.
The origin of the term bag skate, there's a controversy about the name, because some people say, oh, it means that you skate all practice and the pucks stay in the bag, so it's a bag skate. Other people, when I was a kid, we said the coach is going to skate our bag off.
Exactly. I know it's more.
So that's a little more accurate to me. And
it would be killers. So, it would also be known as killers for it in gym. Remember, we'd run back and forth doing killers. A bag skate is kind of like that.
They call them
suicides. Probably also not the best name, but I think that's what they're currently called.
Right. We'll stick with bag skate for the purpose of the podcast.
And so I played beer league hockey for 25 years, and one of the guys on the team, kind of the president of the team, he does kettlebells too. He runs the House of Pain, which is a totally different story. But we'd always talk, man, wouldn't it be cool to create a kettlebell workout that was kind of like a bag skate, you know, about 20 minutes long, 20 to 30 minutes long. And it's just, you know, you're you're dying and you just want it to end. And so we sort of put our heads together, and but I have to give him credit for coming up with the final format. We tried many different permutations and combinations, and he finally came up with this. That's just beautiful, because with a bag skate, all you're doing is skating. You don't even have a puck. You just put your head down, you skate. With this kettlebell workout, there's no fancy exercises. There's no overhead stuff. There's just basically you just go this side 10 reps, this side 10 reps, this side. And then instead of stopping, then you go and do like a round the body pass and something to, you know, that's easy enough that you can keep doing it, but you're trying to get your heart rate down for the next time the coach blows the whistle, here we go. And it's six rounds. And it's two distinct rounds repeated three times. And it is...
With a helmet on and winter boots, for sure.
Yeah, that doesn't give you an advantage. The winter boots are not my favorite thing. And I had to, like, halfway through the workout, I had to get the gear off and just keep going. But
that was funny.
And then I wanted to do like the little stick handling and, you know, like swinging the driveway. I think I even dropped an F-bomb because I think we just got the new garage doors installed and I missed and I left that in the video. I cut out part of it, but you can kind of.
Pure Canadiana, yeah. For sure. I'm going to take a real turn here. Because I think this is fascinating. The biggest podcast on earth, when it comes to downloads and reach and impact, is, I love them or hate them, is the Joe Rogan podcast. And yeah. You were on the Joe Rogan podcast 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And this is before he had his new studio or his whatever it is, but what was that like? Like, what did that do to your life? First of all, you fly to, I guess he was in California at the time. You fly down to California. He flies you down. I don't know. Take us through the Joe Rogan experience. Like, tell us about that, if you can. So I think it's fascinating.
The way I got onto the podcast was somehow my first DVD. I had no digital downloads at this point. Got into Joe's hands. He started doing the workout. And I have to preface this by saying I never created these work. I didn't ever expect a lot of people to do this because I didn't think people like to train this way. And so I started getting, my sales. What I would do is I'd get the DVDs manufactured in Vancouver, and then I would FedEx them to different distributors in the States. And all of a sudden, these guys are like, hey, we need, 1,000 more copies as quick as you can get them. I'm like, well, really? So, and then I got some emails from people saying, asking me questions about the videos. And then finally somebody said, hey, didn't you know Joe Rogan talks about you all the time? I'm like, no, there's no way. And so they sent me some clips and I'm like, that's, he's talking about me. Oh my God. And then it just sort of, next thing I know, my Twitter account blows up because there wasn't Instagram or TikTok or anything back then. It was just, everything was through Twitter. And I actually got, so I had all these people, saying, I got your video, it's awesome. And then next thing I know, in my inbox, there's this DM from Joe Rogan. And I'm like, it's really him. It's got the check mark. And I was like, hey, man.
That's awesome.
You want to be on my podcast? Okay. Because there's a bunch of people saying, ask Keith to be on your podcast. So we were on summer vacation. I was like, oh, my God. Yeah. And so, okay. So we just communicated through Twitter messaging. And he said, okay, come down to, he goes, what, when works for you? I said, well, Thanksgiving weekend in October for our Canadian one. Okay, perfect. So didn't hear anything for a while. And then leading right up to the podcast, he sent me some information about when they're going to pick me up. So we got an Airbnb in Santa Monica. The morning came. You can imagine how nervous I was because, it sounds great to be on Joe Rogan podcast, but a lot of people are going to be watching. And if you come off like some sort of a, like you all, every insecurity that you've ever had in your life just comes crashing in. And this big black Escalade comes pulling up, and this Russian guy's driving it, and got in, and he drives me into this like sort of nondescript industrial park, and there's this little parking lot, pulls in. He goes, "Oh, Joe should be here any minute. He's very punctual." And then next thing you know, this Beamer sports car convertible rolls up. Oh, pops Joe. I'm like, am I dreaming? Joe Rogan pops out, pops the trunk, gets his gym bag. "Hey, bro," bro hug. Follow him. And then I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to be on a podcast. Like, I can't be a fanboy for the whole podcast, but I kind of was for a lot of it because he is funny just to be around. Like, he's just a naturally funny human. And I think I got my message out there. It was, you know, he, the good thing with him was he really questioned me on everything I said. So a lot of people said, he was kind of mean to you. Like, you know, he wasn't very nice to you. And I was like, well, I think that's probably a better viewing experience. And it probably like got me on my toes. And I probably performed a lot better than if he was like, "Oh, Keith, you're awesome."
What do you mean? Your audio cut out for me for a second. I don't know if it did for you, Pete, but what do you mean people said he was being kind of mean to you?
Like, if you listen to the podcast, like, he was kind of being a little bit of a dick.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, he was like...
He was being a comedian, for sure. Which sometimes, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I thought, well, it's his podcast. And, I mean... I like it. It's good. He's challenging me. And so I told people, I said, "Well, what do you want? Like, you want Joe Rogan to be like, 'Oh, Keith Weber's all great.' No, you want him to be like, 'Well, why do you say that?' And then you have to come up with a good answer." Mm-hmm. So I said, "It was an excellent podcast. I couldn't believe it was 2 hours until after I was done. I was like mentally exhausted." And, he's an amazing human being. I mean, I know some people say different things about him, but he's got some fire inside that's you don't see very often. And as soon as that microphone came on, he's like, "You ready?" And I remember I was sitting in this chair I was like, "God, can I change chairs?" Like, it was kind of crooked. He's sitting up here and I've got this little chair here and I'm like, "Oh God." I felt literally on the hot seat, but it was, as soon as that microphone came on, like he went from being like just a nice, "Hey, Joe Rogan," to being like, "Boom, Joe Rogan," the Joe Rogan that we see on TV. And it was excellent. What an excellent experience. And
what did it do to your life? What did it do to your life? When you walked out of that studio, you know, flew back into Calgary or Edmonton, drove down to Red Deer, and then what happened?
Well, immediately after, that's probably the coolest my kids ever thought I was in my life. Like, you know, pretty cool. They're like, "Dad, wow, good job, Dad. Oh, you know,"
that's so good.
And they were just admiring. Like, I had my 10 minutes of fame with my kids, and then getting back to Canada, obviously, video sales. Through the roof. I think what it did to me, I mean, of course, people started recognizing me in public, like, "That Kettlebell Keith," and which again made my wife think I was cool for a change. Like, we were in Jasper a couple summers ago and having beers, and we had a big bike ride that day, and I could see this kid looking, and I'm like, and I thought, I'm looking at myself on the phone, like, do I have something on my face? And then finally I realized this group of kids all had my video and they're like, "Kettlebell Keith," and then come over. And so it's like a big love in, you know, and my wife's like, "Wow." And it happens often enough that my wife's not surprised anymore. And she thinks, "Wow, like, he's pretty cool." And then I think what it did for me, and that's fun for me, like, the most random places, especially when I go to a concert or a big public place, there's always somebody that'll be like, I'll see them looking at me and, "Are you thinking about Keith?" I'm like, I can't believe this. Like, I'm not famous, but I'm for some niche market, I'm famous. So there's like, few people that recognize me, which is amazing. It's so fun. And all these people are cool, right? They're all like, they like doing kettlebells, and they're all really nice kids. Usually kids, right? Each age. And then, and then on a personal level, I really feel like it did change my life, because prior to the podcast, I was just doing stuff for myself and just thinking about, oh, you know, like I want to, you know, I just want to do this for myself and maximize my own life. And now I feel like I even if it takes me a little bit of time, like I really want to help other people and I want to inspire other people. And I've been given this beautiful gift from Joe Rogan. Like, don't waste it. Like, mm-hmm. I there's a lot of people that know about me that otherwise would know. And the best thing I can do is be the best version of myself and be real and be authentic and not try to profit from this recognition I have and this exposure. I just feel like it was a huge gift. It's made me more accountable to myself, and it's made me do probably more things on social media certainly than I otherwise would have, because I try not to be on social media too much, because I mean it's like you said, like Lavelle said, it's very comforting with no effort. It's like, oh, it's so good. Mm-hmm. I like it very much. I learn a lot off Instagram, but I try to keep it to a point where it's just like a very small luxury in my life.
You know what comes across, Keith? I didn't know about you until Pete reached out to me about having you on. And when you start talking and we start digging in, what I'm feeling is you've got a real passion for this. This isn't contrived. This isn't you just trying to sell some barbell or some of your exercise or kettlebell exercise videos or kettlebell. You are an absolute fundamentalist about this stuff, and you just do it because you love it, or you wouldn't be doing it for 20 some years. But you know, at the beginning of the podcast, you started talking about it, I'm like, wow, this guy is a devotee of like he really lives this life, and it's pretty cool. And it's sometimes, you know, you come across people in this space, in the health and wellness space, and they're just trying to sell stuff. But you seem like you're a legitimate Central Alberta boy who just loves working out.
Yeah.
Loves being outdoors, loves working out, and loves helping other people do the same thing, basically.
Yeah, I want other people to feel as good as I do. And I feel like with the kettlebells, I have a tool. Look, not everyone's going to be able to do bar muscle ups in CrossFit, including myself, but that's a goal. It's a goal. You know, like there's lots of stuff that people can't do, or they could learn, but the learning process would be so daunting that they might quit before they get there. Whereas with kettlebells, you could learn it. It's not hard. I've taught people in one. I love a Saturday morning is like my one-on-one class, or usually it's somebody that I'm treating. I'll say, here, they're an ultra runner. I need to do some strength training. I'm like, well, I don't know how effective bench press will be for your ultra running, but I think kettlebells might be what you're after. And then usually it's like, can I bring a friend? Can I bring my husband? Yeah. And then we meet Saturday morning, and I can usually, I've got it streamlined to where I can, like, after an hour, I can have you adept enough that you could do kettlebells. So that's, I'm trying to eliminate the barrier to entry. And that's why I want to do this whole video series where
we were talking about that earlier, that Pete and I were talking about, if you just reduce the friction in your life that stops you from working out, or that delays you from working out, or makes working out more difficult, just get rid of that friction. It makes it so much easier. And if that's as basic as having your shoes beside your bed and your gear ready to go, or your water bottle on your bike, whatever it takes, because we always find excuses to either cut the workout short or not do it altogether. Now, having said that, I'm going to be there March 5th and 6th in Red Deer. If you're around, if time permitting and it fits your schedule, you should put me through a kettlebell routine and we can film it for the podcast.
Hard yes on that.
Yes, absolutely. We could do that.
Yes. YouTube, you two maniacs meet each other. You're not going to stop working out. I hope you have a lot of storage on your phone.
I'm going to have to pull out the real camera. I might have to get my camera woman to help us out with that.
Well, that would be fun. If it works for your schedule, we can certainly do that, because I'll be there overnight that day, and so if we can squeeze it out, that'll be a blast. Yeah. I'll send you. I'll reach out to you
locked up.
If we get the right email address for you.
Oh, that's embarrassing. My kids would say that's a boomer move. Hey, I'm like, guys, I'm not a boomer yet. Come on, like, I'm Gen X, but.
Exactly.
Yeah, our kids will get along.
So where can people learn more about you, Keith? Where should we go to Instagram? Should we go to your website, or where do we go?
I think probably the Kettlebell Keith on Instagram is where I try to put up, useful information on there,
mm-hmm.
not just shirtless selfies, and but I try to.
It is good stuff. Yeah.
And then I do have the YouTube channel where if somebody doesn't want to buy kettlebell videos, but they want to have some free videos under my, I don't know what they're called, some horrible name, like Sinister Kettlebell Workouts for the Advanced Trainee. I've got a whole playlist of the Banksy workout is on there. There's a few different ones that are basic kettlebell stuff. I put the music in, but half an hour long workouts that will really test you. I've got my tutorials on YouTube, and then I have my website. If anybody wanted to purchase the videos, it's really easy. It's just like one of those things where you click, you have to, the pictures with which picture has the bike in it. And the videos are not expensive. Like I was looking at compared to other people in the same field as me, they always want you to subscribe for like so much mm-hmm. per month. And I was doing the math. I'm like, that actually cost a lot of money at the end of the year. And it's just, and they're like, oh, there's a new workout every week. And I'm like, I don't want to have any new workouts. I want to come up with like benchmark workouts that tell me how I'm doing that week, which is why I'm really pumped about the one I'm going to put out right away, which
not good.
I don't know whether it will cost that much. To me, like $20 is a small price to pay for something that's on your phone and you can always have it. And the reason behind the workouts is because the video workouts is because when I was younger, like when we first had our kids, like my wife and I would do Tai Bo together
mm-hmm.
and Bonds of Steel. Remember? Then P90X came out, and, I kind of liked some of those workouts. It was kind of fun. This guy's kind of funny. I personally kind of like that because you just put it in and you hear the music and instantaneously you're drawn into that mindset where, okay, it's on. So, I mean, I could just sell written out workout programs. It's like, what do we do? Oh, five of these. Okay. Whereas if you do it with somebody, it's almost like being there and being in a class, and then you can turn your brain on. It's like, okay, because sometimes I forget my own workout. So like, what are we doing? Oh, I forgot about this. Oh my God. I love the video format, and I've got it so it's on an app. So it's really easy to, you could be at the gym and you don't have to like make a production of it. You could actually just listen to the workout and have your phone off to the side and be like, okay. And it's all, the audio is pretty good. Like the videos are, they're unique. they're hard, and they're always, I never have to, what am I going to do? But I did almost talk myself out of a workout yesterday. I wasn't feeling, we have friends visiting from Australia. Mm. And I thought, wow, like Canadians like to party.
Oh yeah.
So yesterday I was just like, oh, not feeling great. But then came downstairs and I always leave my gym messy to reduce friction, like you said. So I didn't have to like unrack the weights or anything. I'm just like, well, I got the weights set up. I might as well start doing it. So
showing up is 90% of it, right? Once you get there.
And I was in a great mood, slept well.
You're never going to walk out. You're never going to go into your gym and turn around and walk out. You'd beat yourself up for the rest of your life. You got to do something.
Exactly.
Yeah, it felt so good. So, yeah,
Keith, but I think. Thank you for doing this, man. This is awesome.
Thank you.
And yeah, also, no, I want you two guys to get together, and I want to see that. I need footage of that, and then would love to follow up with you later in the summer too.
Yeah, I want to see how training's going.
Yeah,
yeah. If I'm not out of the country and I can get an entry to the race, Pete, do you know anybody?
I know.
I might see you down at Crow's Nest again. It'd be nice to actually talk to you this time, because last time I was in the race, but we never met. So
you were probably a little ways ahead of me, I'd imagine. That was my first question when I got across the line. I just collapsed, and then Pete came up with a Coke that tasted, like you said, better than anything I'd ever tasted. And I said, I wasn't last, was I? And he goes, not quite. I was like, okay. Not quite.
So when I did the race, Keith, I came third, but I was feeling pretty good. I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm an old guy. I came third in the gravel race. And Pete and I are talking, and he goes, yeah, you know, you're pretty good. And I'm looking at the young guy who came second, and then I realized he did the mountain bike race the day before, so I didn't feel too good about it, the fact that he still beat me. So tough race.
Amazing.
Some serious athletes there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it attracts a crowd, definitely, of very, very accomplished people. We have easier races for people who are trying, who are aspiring, but
yes,
people in the long ones are at the tip of the spear for sure.
I want to be one of those people.
I think you're a lot closer than you're giving yourself credit for. Thanks
again.
It's going
to be a test. Thank you, guys. Yeah, this next 6 months is going to be so inspiring and just so,
you know, maybe you should, when you're specifically doing a Crow's Nest Pass 100 workout, just put a hashtag in there or something so that we can see, you know, Crow's Nest Pass 100 or whatever it is, so that we can see that this is part of your training versus your regular Keith Weber stuff. It'd be interesting to see that. And
tag me in any of that stuff for Crow's Nest, and we'll share it to other riders, because they need it too, so that
either way, you tag the podcast and we can repost it. And that you're training for that event, and I think it'll get people thinking about their training, taking it seriously. I like the fact that you're spending 6 months just focusing on this race.
Oh yeah, I mean, this is, like I said, an Ironman. It's very hard, obviously, but it's very lots of safety nets. Okay? Everywhere you go, there's a safety net. There's no safety net in these races. I mean, it's so exciting. It's like,
you got to concentrate the whole time on the downhills. You're going fast.
Oh, actually, I'm picking up my gravel bike today. I've my lovely friends at Mud, Sweat and Gears. I told my wife, I'm going to invest some more money into my bike. I was either going to get a new gravel bike, or I kind of like the one I have. It's a good old aluminum, got the carbon fiber wheels, but it didn't have any shock absorption on the handlebars or the seat. So had all that stuff put in, different drivetrain. So when I'm going up those steep hills, I can pedal a little bit easier, because I think the one I had on was more for a road bike. And so that's going to cost a little bit of money, but my wife's cool. She's like, whatever. That's your thing. So I'm excited to get that home, get that on the trainer, and then I will absolutely, I'll keep you guys in the loop with my training, and because all my training is going to be focused on that race. And
cool.
Yeah, because I mean, and I don't have to change anything. I just have to train harder. I can still do my kettlebells, and it's just going to make me better. So
right on. I can't wait to see this. It's going to be fun.
And then we will see in touch. Maybe I'll send you my number, and then you can text me.
Yep.
And then I will look at my schedule, and I'll make sure I have like a block of time where we can hang out, go to the studio, and do a kettlebell video. And it'd be fun with somebody like you at your level, how you would be so easy to teach. And then as well, we could like just jump to get you starting to do the ultimate workout like right away. Yeah, actually, that's probably the best way to teach somebody like you. Okay, we're going to do this exercise. Okay, perfect. Now we're going to do all those together. And then you get that feeling of, oh, wow, I get it. Like, this is really kind of fun and hard and creative at the same time. Whereas a lot of people, they don't have the fitness to do that. You would. So we will be able to go from A to Z in like an hour. It'll be
right
a
fun. I'm looking forward to
an hour and a half.
And so, I think you've forwarded him the email that I sent out last night.
Yeah.
Good. So then you've got all my contact info on there and we'll do that. But Keith, we want to thank you. This is super fun. Super fun to have somebody that's only 150K north of us right now. A local guy on the podcast. And yeah, you're an inspiration. So
thank you.
Keep it going.
And now I have some content. I need to check out the podcast and listen to these other guys. And because podcasts are getting like movies where it's really hard to find a good one anymore. Like a lot of them, someone's trying to sell you something and they don't, people that used to align with my principles, now they're starting to get to the point where they're like, you've changed.
Yeah.
And not in a good way. So I'm kind of hunting for exactly what you guys are offering. So
right
thank
on.
You.
Right on. Good.
Thanks, man.
Thank you. Oh my God. I'm talking about this stuff.
See you in a month.
Thank you guys.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay.
Yeah, you guys are awesome.
Thanks, guys. Again. Thanks very much.
See ya.
We'll see ya.
One last huge thank you to Keith. Honored to have had you on and hope to have you back again soon. And everybody, once more, thank you for tuning in. We really appreciate you listening to the podcast. The best way for us to grow the podcast is still just simply by word of mouth. So if there's somebody that is in your life that you think would appreciate it, please let them know about it. And then if you're able to just give us a share on social media or a positive rating or review wherever you find the podcast. Thank you again for tuning in. We actually are a little bit ahead of the game here and we have a great episode already in the bag for you. So we'll get that one out to you probably next week. Thank you again for tuning in. We'll be back soon.